Welcome to GVN's Talking Comics interview. On today's show, we welcome writer Harold Schechter and artist Eric Powell. The creators behind Albatross Funny Books' new graphic novel, Did You Hear What Eddie Dean Done? Here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome once again to another edition of GVN's Talking Comics. I'm your host, Martin, and today we will be talking to the creators of an upcoming graphic novel about probably one of the most notorious and maybe influential killers in the last 50 years, Ed Gein, coming from Albatross Exploding Funny Books. Did You Hear What Eddie Dean Done? Is coming out August 4th. And we have the privilege of talking to Harold Schechter and Eric Powell. And welcome to GVN's Talking Comics, guys.
Well, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Okay, so let's just jump right in. So how did this project get put together? I know, Harold, you're quite familiar with the whole situation. I mean, you've written a book about it. And in fact, I just recently saw you in a documentary about it. But how exactly did the graphic novel get put together?
Well, it was all instigated by Eric, who could tell you more about his motives for it. But yeah, I just got contacted by my agent one day, told me Eric Powell, who was a comic book artist whose work I knew well and have admired for many years, had gotten in touch with him about the possible collaboration with. So I, feeling as I did and as I do about Eric's art, I leapt at the chance.
And Eric, what was that? Were you familiar with Ed Gein before you approached Harold about this?
I was. He, like with a lot of people, he was kind of the boogeyman of my childhood. You know, it was, there was a lot of talk on, you know, among other kids about how Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a real story and things like that. And I was a big fan of Harold's work. I, you know, had devoured all of his material and had the idea of doing a Gein book centered around his isolation in Wisconsin. Being very familiar with Harold's book Deviant, I felt like I couldn't do anything better than what Harold had already done. But I did, a few days later, I thought I should maybe see if he'd be interested in collaborating on something, because he may have more information since he had come to him since he had written that book. I wasn't too hopeful that he was going to respond, but very happy to find out he was a huge comic fan. And as he said, was very enthusiastic about working on a book.
Okay, so now Eric brought up Harold that, you know, he wasn't sure if he'd come up with anything new. Had you discovered anything new that you were able to put into the graphic novel that you hadn't already discussed in your previous book?
A couple of small things, but it wasn't so much that I had come up with new research material. Actually, Eric, who did a lot of research while we were collaborating on the book, came up with some juicy little tidbits. But I had over the years come to some different conclusions about the nature of Gein's psychopathology and the sources of his psychopathology. You know, what was really going on inside his very disordered mind when he was committing all these atrocities. You know, I saw the graphic novel, among other things, as an opportunity to convey some of the ideas that I had, or insights that I had arrived at, you know, after having written the book.
I was just going to say his, and I think that's really Harold's perspectives on the inner workings of Gein's mind are really what makes this book stand out and makes it special. I feel like it's the best part of the book. It's a completely new perspective, I think, than what has been put out there before.
As I read through it, I mean, there is so many different aspects of it that I found kind of fascinating. Number one, like I said, even though, you know, it's basically about Ed, but his mother, I mean, is almost as much of a central character in it as Ed. And it kind of opened up all kinds of discussions. And I think you touched in it a little bit in the book, you know, especially at the end, where, you know, people were discussing, you know, they can, because they knew Augusta, they could kind of understand why maybe Ed turned out the way he did. And of course, other people saying, no, there's no excuse in what he did. But I mean, I could see where it would at least would open up a discussion. I mean, for that matter, even with her husband, who, you know, if someone nagged me as much as she nagged, I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't go to drinking myself. It's a very fascinating, you know, different ways you look at it. It's a fascinating thing, and it opens up all kinds of discussion.
We definitely wanted to have that the discussion be a little ambiguous and tell different or present different perspectives as far as you know, how people interpreted the crimes and Keene's actions.
No, well, you know, as Eric was saying, you know, it is. I just want to say, by the way, I think the best part of the book is like Eric's art. <You know? laughs> but as he was saying, I mean, you know, I think we, you know, there's always been this very, in a way, kind of simplistic Freudian interpretation of what was going on in Keene's mind, you know, like a very extreme form of this Oedipal complex. And of course, when Keene's crimes happened in the 50s, that was like the heyday of Freudian analysis. So, you know, that inevitably was the way his crimes got interpreted. But I think, again, in our book, we're able to introduce a kind of different perspective on what was going on, you know, it, based on these insights I had and Eric's like amazing visualization of that stuff. So yeah, hopefully it might open up some new discussions about what was going on with Keene.
Now, as far as art goes, Eric, I said, now you chose to do this in black and white. Was that the initial choice? Did you ever consider color? And also, you kind of stayed away from really as much as it could have been real gratuitous, you know, images. Right. I mean, I assume that was also your intention?
Yes. I did some initial sketches and started just feeling out the way I wanted the book to look visually, and I just couldn't see it in color. And I think something, having looked at a lot of the you know, news material and stuff from his arrest, and you know, just it was an era of black and white, and it just, to me, it just wouldn't seem it just wouldn't feel right personally for me to see the story portrayed in color. So it was definitely a conscious choice to go in that direction. And as far as the violence and gore of the story goes, I mean, it's it's impossible to escape based on the, you know, subject matter. But Harold and I discussed it quite a bit early on about how we wanted to portray the, you know, some of the gruesome aspects of this. And I think we were both wanted to stay away from the kind of exploitive nature. It had been covered covered in the past pretty well, I think, from that take of a gore fest kind of comic. So we didn't want to do that.
The whole black and white thing kind of reminded me of the old creepy you know, Warren magazines, which mm-hmm. I was a big fan mm-hmm. of. I mean, as far as that format. So I mean, right, to me it worked perfectly.
And it also you know, also has the visual feel of Psycho, mm-hmm. which of course is in black and white. So you know, and we also live in an age where anybody who can see incredibly gruesome images of, you know, the atrocities that Keene performed. So yeah, I mean, there's no real point it would have seemed gratuitous. And, you know, as with a lot of horrific stuff, I mean, you know, sometimes suggesting things can be more unsettling, you know, than showing them directly. Actually, the work for me, the most disturbing image in the whole graphic novel is this one panel that I can barely look at, showing Ed helping his mother disrobe. So, but yeah, that's an amazing image.
I thought you were going to say the close up of him eating the beans.
Yeah, those are pretty disturbing.
I remember the day I sent that to you, you were like, I can barely look at that panel of him eating beans close up of his face.
Yeah, but the other one, where he's pulling off his mother's dress or something, that one of those images you can't unsee.
So, just touching on some.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But the other thing, his brother Henry, of course, passed away under mysterious circumstances. Did they ever conceive the idea that maybe Ed had something to do with that?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of rumors that he did have something to do with it. After all, his grotesque crimes were discovered, I myself have doubts that he had done it. I think it's, from my writing about other kinds of crimes, it's not uncommon, when somebody commits some heinous, particularly heinous crime, and people look at his background and decide that different things, he might have been responsible for different things. So, I mean, a lot of ambiguity surrounds it. Nobody knows for sure. But my best guess is, that Gein probably didn't murder his brother, though he was probably not unhappy that his brother was dead.
The part of the thing that got me thinking about it, and I'm pretty sure probably other people think about, was the deal where he came and told him that he couldn't find his brother, but then he led him right to where the body was. I thought that was kind of...
That was always a suspicious circumstance, no question about that.
Okay, so now you talked, of course, about the connection to Psycho. And actually, the very beginning of the book, you kind of start out in that. And one of the things that I thought about as I was reading it, and actually, again, you kind of mentioned it in the back of the book, is the, you have people claiming that Hitchcock's Psycho was going to cause people to, do copycat killings and things like that. I always have a hard time getting where people complain or basically want to say, just like the Comics Code Authority thing, where they want to say that comics are causing your children to act up and things like that, which I thought was ridiculous. And of course, the comics publishers made their own guidelines to kind of get away from the government sticking their nose in it. And even now, like I said, they all want to blame violence on video games. They want to blame it on just about everything. And I don't know if maybe it's just because it's an easy way out to try to describe why people are doing horrible things. I thought it was interesting that you touched upon it on your end piece there.
I mean, I've written a whole book about that subject, book called Savage Pastimes. The thesis of my book, what I illustrate in my book, that ever since there's been popular culture, there have been these moral crusaders blaming these different kinds of popular media for juvenile crime. I mean, it goes back. I wrote a book about a 13-year-old serial killer back in the post-Civil War era, a kid named Jesse Pomeroy, who was, a serial sex murderer. He was 13, 14 years old. He was 14 years old when he was finally arrested. And, when they arrested him, he was going around and murdering and mutilating younger children. They blamed it on dime novels. Dime novels were these, precursors of the pulp novels and to some extent the comic books. Every time there's been a new form of popular entertainment, immediately these moral watchdogs, claim it's a danger to, it's going to warp young lives. It happened with dime novels, it happened with the movies, it happened with radio. As you say, it happened with comic books. Now it's happening with video games. I'm sure in the future, you know, when Grand Theft Auto is looked at as this benign form of entertainment, and everybody's, you know, whatever, plugged into a virtual reality helmet, you know, they'll start blaming that. So that's just been going on since the start of popular culture.
Okay, so of course, Psycho wasn't the only film that had an effect on, of course, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and of course, Silence of the Lambs. They borrowed, you know, James Gunn's thing about basically making a female. Now, did I remember reading correctly? Ed actually also had some issues as far as whether maybe that he wanted to be a woman instead of a male.
In his psychological interviews, he said he claimed that, but not a lot to, you know, go on as far as, I mean, other than the fact that he spoke a lot about Christine Jorgensen, who was a trans person in the 50s, first person in the U.S. to get a sex change. So there's evidence of that where he spoke on that. And of course, you know, making the leggings and the breastplate and everything out of women's skin. It's difficult to nail down exactly, you know, what the purpose of all of this was. You know, we can draw conclusions, but was he trying to make a replacement for his mother? Was he trying to transform himself? You know, you can come up with your own kind of theory based on, you know, the evidence at hand, but it's kind of hard to draw a definitive conclusion. Mm-hmm. I think, anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, I just thought of something that we should have included. You know, we have this whole thing about his worship of the great mother goddess, and just realized, and I can't remember what particular cult it was, but there was this ancient cult of the Magna Mater goddess where the priests would castrate themselves. So, you know, it all kinds of ties in. By the way, I never mentioned to Eric that Christine Jorgensen went to the same high school as my sister.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You have to remember that material, though. We could put that in an expanded edition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so toward the end, where I think Ed was trying to see if he could get released out, but as he got older, he didn't really want to bring back up what he did. He, you know, thought the past was the past. Of course, the psychiatrists were saying, well, we can't let you out unless you're able to discuss what you did, which is maybe probably why he never did get out.
It's debatable if he wanted to be released. I think I read a comment somewhere. It may have been in the notes that you gave me, Harold, where the psychiatrist was saying, as it got closer to the interview or the judgment on whether or not he could be, you know, considered for release, his mental state became worse. Maybe because he didn't want to leave, and the stress of the thought of leaving the mental institution was making him worse.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, it's a commentary on the kind of horrific life he was leading before he was incarcerated. You know, that you know, his life in the institution was like way better than anything he had experienced before. So, you know, it was actual electricity, you know, stuff like that. So indoor plumbing. So it's hard to know how eager he really was to leave.
So did you hear Eddie Gingdun is coming out on August 4th? What is it that you, I mean, like I said, what audience are you actually aiming this for? Are you aiming it for people who are already familiar with the store, or for people who don't know the store, like in my case, where it kind of will educate you? Is that exactly who do you hope this will reach the most?
I think it appeals to both people who aren't familiar with the case and people who are, you know, enamored with it, because we do have a different point of view that I don't think has been expressed before. And it's just, you know, there's no other way to put it. It's a fascinating story for people who aren't familiar with the case and the time period, the way that the case affected the time period. It's a really fascinating segment of American history.
Yeah, I mean, Gein's been a cult figure since the time his crimes were committed. I mean, even when I was writing my book, I mean, I hadn't heard of Gein when I started writing it. But in the course of researching it, I discovered there were like Ed Gein fan clubs and things like that, you know, and his notoriety, you know, has really grown over the years. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, as Eric says, I mean, it's aimed at both audiences. But I do think that the large number of people who are fascinated by Gein, and Gein's story does seem to exert this endless fascination, you know, find new things in it. I mean, it's certainly never been represented in the way, you know, Eric's been able to do that. So,
okay, so before I let you guys go, Eric, you got anything else? You know, I know you've been pretty much concentrating on getting this done, but do you have anything new coming out that you want our followers to know about?
Not right now. Just we've been focusing so much on this that, you know, it's been the main priority. We'll have more Goon material coming out later in the year. But for right now, this is our main focus.
Well, how about you, Harold? You got anything else going on besides this?
Yeah, you know, I'm always writing. You know, no shortage of homicidal psychopaths in our national history to write about. So I'm always working on something.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, guys. And we'll be following the book with interest, of course. And hopefully maybe talk to you again sometime down the line.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to GVN's Talking Comics. Please come back again. Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.